How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey everyone, it's Evian, and I'm coming to you live from an Airbnb in Los Angeles where the sun is kissing my face and I am living my whole ass best life. I originally came to LA for work. I had a speaking gig that I was doing with Playboy, and then a couple of meetings regarding some exciting partnerships that are soon to come. So yeah, this trip was meant to be all business, but it slowly turned into a vacation where I've been meeting up with some of my favorite people, eating amazing food, reconnecting with nature and my partner, and giving myself lots of pleasure as a garbage truck comes barreling down the street that I'm in. Oh boy. Okay. So as I'm recording this, I am right in the middle of vacation mode, and that's why I am re-releasing one of the most popular episodes of The Sexually Liberated Woman. This episode came out 2 years ago, but I still get emails about how profound this episode was. It's the one where I talk to Dr. Zaleika Clark about Oshun. Oshun is the Yoruba deity of sexuality and pleasure. And me and Dr. Zaleika talked about what it looks like to decolonize Black femme sexuality. After re-listening to this episode, I understand why it's so popular. I mean, it's about reclaiming sexuality and spiritual practices that we, Black people, have long since been disconnected from, thanks to colonization. And as I was listening to it again, I felt something click inside of me, like, oh, yeah, this legacy of sexual freedom and fluidity and honoring of the divine feminine, I remember this. This is my heritage. I feel like this conversation is a permission slip for all of us to seek and claim the pleasure that is our birthright, as an act of resistance against systems of oppression that tells us we're not allowed to access or desire that pleasure. So yeah, it's amazing. Dr. Zaleika is amazing. And I really hope you enjoy listening and revisiting this important conversation. Okay, as the wind is blowing furiously through my beaded curtain, I'm going to let you go. I'm going to go outside, frolic in the sun in my hoe clothes. But yeah, thank you for being here, and I'll talk to you soon. Hey everyone, I'm Evian Whitney, and welcome to the Sexually Liberated Woman podcast. So there's someone whose name I've been seeing come up a lot lately. I've heard her name used before a couple of times, but lately it seems like she is everywhere. In my witchy spaces, in the articles I've been reading about feminism and sexuality, in the music that I'm listening to. She's even showing up in my client work, and that's when I was like, okay, who is this woman, and why are people talking about her so much? You're probably wondering who I'm referring to, and I'm talking about Oshun, a Yoruba deity, an African goddess of femininity, sexuality, and sensual pleasure. And as I started to explore who she was, I noticed my curiosity began to grow to the point where I wanted to know even more about her. Particularly how I could potentially use Oshun and her influence in my spiritual and sexual life. And that's when I remembered Dr. Zuleika's work. I stumbled across Dr. Zuleika through this Women of Color sexual health network that we're both a part of, and I noticed that she was posting a lot about Oshun and this other thing I'd never heard of called Oshunality. And I was really interested in her work and what she had to say about Oshun. So I hit her up, and it turns out that she did her entire dissertation on Oshun, Afro-Indigenous spirituality, and Black femme sexuality. She actually allowed me to read through her dissertation, which completely blew my mind. And that's when I was hooked. I knew I had to invite her onto the podcast and get her to share with us some of her wisdom. So my intention in getting her on the podcast was to interview her about Oshun, who she is, what she represents, and the ways that we might use Oshun and her influence as an erotic muse. But after reading her dissertation and having this conversation with her, it became very clear to me that Oshun wasn't just a goddess. She was a catalyst that helped instigate these really beautiful awakenings in Dr. Zuleika's sexuality and Black femme identity. So a lot of what we talked about wasn't so much about Oshun as an Orisha, but the ways Oshun has helped Dr. Zuleika come to some incredible realizations about herself that have completely transformed the way she expresses herself as a sexual being. All of that is to say, in this conversation, we talk about so many things. We talk about African sexuality and what that sexuality looked like outside of the patriarchy. We talked about the process of decolonizing sexuality and creating new and empowering narratives about the erotic. We talked about sensuality, radical self-care, transgenerational trauma, pleasure and non-sexual things, menstruation, self-love as a way of fighting internalized oppression, and oceanality, which after this conversation, I'm going to be practicing much more mindfully. So I don't usually do this, but I feel like it's fitting for this episode. Before getting into it, I invite you to make yourself a cup of tea, maybe light a candle, and create a space where you can really take this conversation in. It is so rich and informative, and I think it's really going to rock your world. Okay, enjoy. I am so excited to talk to you today about Oshun, and it's something that I keep seeing coming up in my Facebook feeds, in my spiritual circle, and particularly around this idea of sexuality. So I feel like you're the best person to talk to about this, and I just have so many questions about her and you and what it is about Oshun that inspires you so much.
Great. Yeah. Thank you for talking with me.
So I guess my first question is like, just like on a basic level, because there's so many people, myself included, who don't really have an understanding of who Oshun is, but they're seeing and hearing about Oshun so much, particularly in pop culture with Beyonce and the Lemonade album. Who is Oshun, and like, what does she represent? Like, where does she come from?
That's a great question. I think to start off, we're talking about Yoruba spirituality out of modern day Nigeria. And Oshun is an Orisha. An Orisha is a force of nature or an energy matrix or a deity or goddess. Oshun is associated with fresh water and is also associated with fertility, wealth, joy, sensuality, childbirth. She's the protector of women. She's known as the source or a conduit through which all life flows and is known as the epitome of sensuality and sexual pleasure.
Mm.
One thing that I really love, Audre Lorde wrote a poem called The Wind of Orishas, and she has a line in there, "The beautiful Oshun and I lie down together in the heat of her body. My truth becomes stronger." She also represents knowledge, and she calls attention to embodied truths. So she's also an Orisha of unconditional love, reciprocity, diplomacy. She's associated with creativity and love. I think also it's kind of just, I always have a hard time summarizing it because she's complex and there's many different stories and many interpretations, and it's semi-problematic to even try to put descriptive words on her. But those are kind of little summaries of what Oshun represents.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you mentioned that little piece about how Oshun encompasses so much, and from what it sounds like, she encompasses things that our language can't really contain for her. So I appreciate that you're like bringing awareness in this conversation to that, like, you know, we're speaking about something that is a force, something that is bigger than us, something that like we with our human minds can't fully understand and contain. And I actually wanted to know, you know, you wrote your entire dissertation on Oshun and Oceanality. What is it about Oshun that fascinates you so much?
Some say that it's Oshun that found me, or I kind of just kept stumbling upon Oshun. I was reading African Sexualities, A Reader by Sylvia Tamale. And there's a chapter on sex positivity, and it talks about Oshunality. And so for me, I was just really fascinated with trying to figure out what does sexuality look like outside of patriarchy, outside of Western philosophy, and really what was genders and sexuality like before Christianity and Islam on motherland. And so I think that Oceanality was a big kind of clue and glimpse into...
I don't mean to cut you off. I just want to know, what is Oceanality exactly?
The simplest definition is African eroticism and sensuality.
Okay.
But it's also affirms the diversity of sexual pleasures and eroticism. Mm. It affirms the normality of sexual pleasure. To me, it's a paradigm. It's not like a orientation. It is way of looking at sexuality that is not Western. And so for me, it's coming from a post-colonial, more African-centered perspective. And so with that, it normalizes pleasure in certain sexual behaviors and fantasies and eroticism that may be deemed, you know, have a lot of judgment in the Western concept.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. And so it challenges kind of our Western ideology and even having sex to revolve around a penis. Oceanality has one of the core concepts is the devouring vagina that, I love this, it speaks to the agency of the vulva. And instead of the penis being a sign of dominance, it talks about during intercourse where the penis is being swallowed, it's made to disappear. And then the withdrawing of the penis is seen as an act of resistance from being pulled in and re-swallowed by the demanding vagina. And so I think it's really interesting that it has this narrative that kind of changes the Western narrative of sex, is like the penis is going to conquer the vagina, and sex kind of supposed to revolve around a male orientated kind of narrative. And so this is a different narrative that I found very fascinating. And
yeah,
it just opened up new ways of looking at sex and made me question all of the messages that I got in kind of Western understanding of sex and sexuality.
Yeah, this whole idea of oceanality, it feels really empowering for women. Like women are not so much the passive receivers in sex, but that they are like active participants, maybe even the assertive people, which is a huge shift in the way that I've been taught about sex and the way that I've been brought up. When I think about sex, I think about men as being the dominant one and women as being the passive one. So like what you're talking about with oceanality is this idea of women being seen as powerful. Like this whole concept of ocean and oceanality is really fascinating me right now because it's so different.
Absolutely. I think that it definitely is like, it's the woman that decides if they're going to allow anything to enter. It just reminds me of the power of the vulva, and that is often missing in Western narratives.
Yeah. So you mentioned that as you were learning about oceanality, you were kind of confronted with all of these things and all of these beliefs that didn't really quite fit. I'm curious about the things that you were having to like work through as a result of practicing oceanality, but also realizing like, wow, this is vastly different from the way that I've been taught and the way that the world as a whole kind of sees sex.
Yeah, it was kind of challenging just because it's like everything I ever knew may be a lie, you know, sort of a big jolt, or, you know, what messages have I been internalizing that I took for truth that is not empowering me? And just even, I think, fighting misogynoir or like the hatred of Black women, it's like I may not consciously think, I mean, I love myself, but looking at depictions of Oshun, she really loves herself. She knows she's beauty. She emanates beauty in so many different ways, and she has no problem looking at herself in the mirror. So for me, it was like, why do I have issues looking at in the mirror for over a certain amount of time? Oh, this is probably the messages that I've been taught. Oh, don't be narcissistic. Don't be too vain. You know, all these things, but it just made me question it all, and really finding truth in my embodied knowledge, ancestral wisdom, and just experiencing the joys that my body can have. My body has capabilities of healing and receiving pleasure. So it was really developing my sensuality, my understanding of sensuality in a non-judgmental way with a radical self-acceptance. I mean, I was moving in sensual ways, listening to music, smells and tastes and foods and all of the pleasures that's available to us that we may not be touching upon because it's not seen as proper, or politics of respectability, or, you know, other messaging that I've been receiving.
Yeah, you're talking about this idea of sensuality, which I love so much. And I've been trying to practice, trying to take away this idea that my genitals and sexual intercourse is the only way to experience sexual energy.
Mm-hmm.
And I like this idea of like really being in my own body and like, you know, finding pleasure through things that aren't not necessarily sexual.
Right.
In the ways that like our culture and our society tells us that they should be sexual. And how like incredibly amazing it is to realize that there are so many ways that I can experience pleasure that don't necessarily look like having penis and vagina sex.
Yeah. And that's what I was realizing too. Like there's so many different ways, because we think sensuality is a part of sexuality, and it doesn't even have to be sexual the way we understand it.
Yeah.
But there's also our inner verse, like our inner universe and our sexual inner universe. We have our emotional sexual self, our social sexual self, our spiritual sexual self, our physical sexual self. You know, we have so many different aspects, even of our internalized desires and what provides eroticism. And really what was very transformative for me was understanding the power of self-love and the importance of self-love.
Mm.
Just loving myself and all of me, that was a big part of fighting internalized oppression and unlearning kind of the messages that I've got. Because if I'm looking at media, I'm going to just start nitpicking at myself. But moving into radical self-acceptance and self-love, I was really able to begin to decolonize myself or unlearn negative forms of oppression and being present in the here and now and being standing in my power.
Yeah. I like that you just used the word decolonize. And I had the honor and privilege to read through your dissertation, which is amazing, by the way. It's so in depth. Like, I can tell that you poured hours and all of like your heart and your blood and your sweat and tears into this work. And it really like resonates in that way. It's so beautiful. But one thing that came up a lot in your dissertation was this idea of having a colonized sexuality and this process of decolonizing that sexuality,
mm-hmm.
particularly for Black femmes, which I really, really appreciate. And I wondered if you could talk about what a colonized sexuality looks like and what that process of decolonizing that sexuality is as a practice.
So I talk about sexual colonialism, basically how our understanding of sexuality has been hijacked through the colonizer's eyes and lens. And so some examples are like body policing and shaming. So white beauty standards. And then internalized oppression, like misogyny, hatred of Black women, but also even the way we see gender, because gender is a colonial imposition. And thinking if we have a binary view of gender, for me, that's a colonized view that we've internalized. So kind of even opening up our understanding of gender, because again, it makes me think of, you know, Yoruba language is genderless. There's no pronouns, you know, so even speaking English now and translating Yoruba concepts into English, the patriarchalization occurs and there's gendering that happens that kind of changes our perception. So in terms of our understanding of sexuality, even Black sexuality, you know, it's been misused to misinterpret Black women's bodies and hypersexualized and dehumanized and used for justification of rape and a lot of other problematic things that happened. And so I think of different ways to understand sexuality that's not based off of white, capitalistic, cis, hetero patriarchy. And I think that looking at non-phallocentric views of sex was just so enlightening for me. And I think it can be for Black femmes, for other people, for men too, because there's just not one narrative available. There's multiple narratives available, and we've only been given one narrative, and all of the others have been silenced and marginalized. So reviving this narrative is really refreshing to me. It gives us more choice. You can choose what is truthful to you and what stories are can be beneficial to unlocking the blocks that we have for ourselves to be great and to fulfill our purpose in life. We have a right to pleasure. That is our right. And there's been a lot of systems in place for us not to have access to that. And even erotophobia, like not fear is a strong word, but making eroticism negative.
Mm.
not embracing all of the joys of pleasure. So having an open mind in terms of who we are as sexual beings or non-sexual beings, or even who we are as the self, looking at what it means to be a human from different lenses can be very empowering, just to have a better understanding of who we are.
Yeah. And what you're speaking to, I feel, are things that are really deeply entrenched in us. Like when I think about like my ancestors and the way that they saw their sexuality, and I'm not talking about like distant ancestors, like I'm talking about my great great grandmother, and how their ideas about sex and sexuality and womanhood were so ingrained in them that those things, like this is a little woo, but I believe it. Like I believe that those things can get so ingrained in us, like not just on an intellectual level, but on a physiological level, that like those certain core woundings are unconsciously and indirectly passed down to me. And so all of this sounds so amazing, like this idea of decolonizing sexuality and coming to a place of erotic power and reclaiming your Black sexuality, especially if you're a Black femme. But it also sounds really hard to do because of how entrenched these things are and how much core wounding there is around slavery and racism and sexism and mm-hmm. misogyny. Like all of these things are just so mm-hmm. deep, and it almost feels like hard to do.
Yeah. Well, what you're speaking to, transgenerational trauma, transmission, and it happens. It's up to 7 generations. I mean, there's new studies that show that, yeah, trauma is not only transmitted, but you have other things that are being transmitted as well. And so I think about unlearning these things and kind of breaking these patterns that have been given to us.
You know, I kind of want to bring it down to like a personal level. Like you mentioned a minute ago that you had to unlearn a lot of things in order to heal yourself from that transgenerational trauma. And I wondered, like, what was that process like for you? Like, how did you begin that process of unlearning those things? I know that's kind of like a loaded question.
Yeah.
Because I know that there's a lot, right?
I actually created a whole model that speaks to my experience. I call it the autosexual decolonization model.
Ooh, okay.
And so first part is awareness, learning about colonialism and the oppressive forces that are at work. And then deconstructing critical thinking. You know, I thought I knew what sex was. I thought I knew what sexuality was. I thought I knew what gender was. And I broke it down to such an extent where I had no idea what it was. Or I just questioned the information that I got. And then I got to a place where when you deconstruct, and then I reconstructed. So I kind of took all of the information that I knew and used my creativity and put words to these experiences that I was having in a non-pathologized way. And so then I talk about sexual decolonization, or just kind of having an empowering viewpoint of who I am as a sexual being outside of oppressive forces. Mm. And then I got it on a theoretical level, but then the practice of it, taking the theory and putting it into action. Mm-hmm. So That was my autosexual decolonization process. And it's really using self-love and self-determination and self-knowledge to challenge and undo negative effects of colonialism or patriarchy or, you know, other oppressive forces that may limit how we understand ourselves and the potential that we have. Mm. One example I use, or that is big, is how I came to understand getting my period. So I kind of was just like always a drag, like this is a bummer, like I have it. It was an inconvenience to me,
yeah,
getting cramps, and
that's how it is for me.
I just had like kind of a negative kind of orientation to it. But when I was asking about Oceanality, she's or Oshun, she is a ruler of creative organs. So that's associated with the womb and the vulva. And so she's also associated with menstruation. And one of the priestesses that I was interviewing, she said, you know, Oshun is associated with sexuality of menstruation. And I was like, whoa. And then I look it up. There are people that are really into that. It's menosexuality, menosexuals. They're lovers of those who menstruate.
And interesting.
There's also the opposite. And so I started thinking about it in an empowering way, thinking about it as a privilege. Not all people can even have that, or even thinking about pain in a different way, instead of pain being associated with negative, pain being a form of awareness, being a form of knowledge, and having a different connotation associated with pain. And now when I'm experiencing cramps, I'm like, oh, hi, thank you. I have a uterus. I'm aware of it. And then it reminds me of Oshun, and it reminds me of the power of my ancestors and all that we've endured. And I'm grateful that I'm not numb. I'm grateful that I can feel. And when I can feel the pains, then I can enjoy me not being in pain. I think pain can inform us. It's a way a body is communicating with us. And so, like, what is my body telling me?
What a beautiful and, like, radical way of looking at your period. Like, I've heard of people, right, like,
decolonize menstruation.
Yes, like, I've heard of people, like, taking their period blood and, like, having their own rituals. But this idea, like, everything that you were just speaking of just now, I'm like, oh, my gosh, that's, like, taking it to a whole other level. Like, I kind of like it.
Yeah, I think we've allowed patriarchal narratives, and we've internalized them, and it's having an effect on our experiences and our interpretation of our own body. So yeah. I'm like, you know, what are some non-patriarchal ways of viewing my body? And why am I feeling shame of something that's natural? And it really shifted my whole understanding of self, because, you know, being in radical self-acceptance, I was like, how is it that I'm not accepting the fact that I bleed sometimes? You know, that can't be excluded from me accepting myself. When I say accept yourself, it's all parts of self.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point, because, like, you know, in my personal journey, I've been trying to accept my body and myself and my darkness and all these other things. But, like, mm-hmm. oftentimes the period, because it's such a pain in the ass, like, I don't really think about my period as something that I need to accept consciously and, like, really right. work to just, like, move out of the way of, and, like, just allow it to just be what it is. And so I like this idea of taking radical self-acceptance to a level that looks at the not so pleasant parts of you, like yeah. your period and yeah. cramps and bleeding out of your vagina. Cause yeah, it's pretty rough.
Yeah. I don't mean to minimize anyone's experience of it, but again, we're not being given alternative narratives, even childbirth. You don't see priestesses of Oshun giving birth, and then we're now hearing of orgasmic births. You know,
yeah.
if we're only taught that, oh, this is going to be horrible, it's, I'm not saying that it's not painful, but it's
sure.
the way we deal with the pain. It's how we understand our pain and move through it in an empowering way. And there's so many things that we've been taught by experts, by science, by facts, that may be counterintuitive to our ancestral knowledge, to our embodied knowledge. For me, it's just, I want to know different ways, different perspectives, so I can have a choice, so I can be empowered in terms of how I'm going to approach my challenges and my bodily functions and going through life as a human.
It seems like with Oshun and Oshunality, you're talking about putting the power in your hands and, like, taking the power away from structures and systems of oppression that have led you to believe that sex or femaleness or femininity or sensuality is one particular thing. And all of this sounds like so incredibly, really very like, I was going to say feministy, but like that sounded like a buzzword, but it really is. Like, I think that there's something very like inherently feminist about Oshun.
Oh yeah. Some call her the first feminist. One thing I wanted to say is that thinking about power instead of scarcity and hoarding, because we're used to only certain people having power, but I think this is talking about empowerment and power in a way different paradigm that's talking about it in an abundance way, and that we all have access to it internally, but there's also forces that we may not even see. We say worldview, but that privileges these very concrete ways of being able to measure things. But the Yoruba talk about a world sense, and some things can't even be seen, right? There is a potential for other things going on that we can't necessarily see, like guardian angels or orishas or our ancestors that may be doing work, things that we may not even know about and are beyond our human capacity for understanding, that may be working in our favor, that may be supporting us. And so recognizing power beyond what we even know.
Yeah, I really appreciate that you just spoke to power and looking at power in a different way, because like this was actually a conversation that I had with a client of mine recently. We were talking about reclaiming and stepping into our power. And there was this point in our conversation where there started to be a little discomfort around even using that word or even thinking about us as powerful because of these systems of oppression that we know very well that are very powerful and pervasive. So I like this idea of you kind of helping to like reform and even kind of reclaim this idea of power and centering it not in a way of like you have power over someone, but like, I don't know, that there's some sort of unity around that.
Yeah, I think that I'm like, decolonize power. I think we have to really start.
Yes.
I don't even know what that would look like. But I do think that, first of all, power is very complicated, but it doesn't have to be hoarded. Mm. It can be shared. And there's so much within ourselves that we've been conditioned not to know. We've been conditioned not to know our power. And so it's getting scary, especially for those who have hoarded the conventional understanding of power, to see how powerful those marginalized folks really are when we stand in our truth.
When was the last time you had an orgasm? Okay, but when was the last time you had an orgasm that was so incredible it healed your sexuality? Lots of us approach masturbation as just a thing to do to get us off and move on with our day. But what if you could touch yourself to facilitate sexual liberation? With Chakrubs, you can. I've been using my Chakrub for years, and what I love about it is that Chakrubs not only gets me off, but helps me create an intentional self-pleasure practice that connects me to my body and my inner wisdom. Chakrubs is a woman-owned sexual wellness company that makes beautiful, handcrafted pleasure tools from pure crystal. These crystals are a natural, earth-made material that come with their own unique properties to help awaken higher levels of consciousness, help you work through emotional imbalances, and heal deep core wounding. And the orgasms are incredible. If you want to bring sensual vibes and much-needed healing to your sexuality, go to chakrubs.com and use my code LIBERATION to get 15% off your purchase. That's chakrubs.com, promo code LIBERATION for 15% off your purchase. Center your pleasure and heal your sexuality with Chakrubs, and may your orgasms be plentiful. I love everything you're saying. I want to know more about Oshun, and I want to learn about the ways that I can adopt some of these practices and ideologies of Oshun as a way of empowering me and helping me to step fully into my Black femme sexuality. Where should I go next? Like, what would be a really good way for me to dip a toe into Oshun and Oshunality?
Ooh, everyone's journey is different. I think for me, it was practicing mindfulness, making time for self-love and self-adoration. Mm. But the practice of mindfulness has been really helpful. It's actually been used as a tool for neurodecolonization or decolonizing your mind. So for me, it's trying to sit quietly in meditation. And you can talk to experts. I mean, in terms of spiritual fulfillment, you may want to set up a safe environment within their means. And this may be creating like a shrine or a place to honor our ancestors or deities that may be watching over or guiding us. I think about, I just want to share like a little ritual.
Yeah, please do.
This is like people who are struggling to get that self-love popping, mm-hmm. is taking water, maybe just like a glass of water, and sitting and meditating with that water and giving very loving messages to the water and thinking about things that you love and kind of infusing the water with a loving energy and then drinking that water and allowing the love-infused water to penetrate your body. There's been studies about the memory that water holds, and, you know, there was a really fun Japanese experiment on water and energy. And
yeah, I heard about that. Like, these people would say certain things to water and they would freeze it, right?
Yep. The crystals will be so beautiful for the ones that were told positive things, and then the water that was told negative things were not symmetrical and kind right. of deformed. So yeah, I mean, thinking about what we're ingesting in our body, but just simple thing like looking yourself in the mirror and checking out your body and doing a body map or exploring your erogenous zones and accepting what brings you pleasure. What are your passions? You know, I think this is a really important time right now to really be clear on who you are and being open to what that may look like. A lot of us are like, I want to meet my star-crossed lover. But I think it's really important to be in a space where you're thinking about self-love first before we go out and seek it from others, you know, finding peace within ourselves so that the behavior of others do not disturb us.
I love that I was expecting for you to go on about some books that I can read. I actually love that you said self-care and self-love, because that is something that is doable. I mean, it's reading a book is fine, but like, we're talking about some pretty heady kind of stuff right now. And I really love practices that help get me back into my body and practice this in a way where I can actually like embody the things that I'm wanting to explore. And because Oshun, it sounds like she is so much about embodiment and sensuality and pleasure and self-love and adornment, like mm-hmm. just knowing that I can build a practice, a sexual liberation practice with Oshun, with the help of self-love, self-care, mirror work. I love this, like saying love notes into water. Like, I love this. I'm going to try that like right after I get off the phone with you.
Yeah. There's lots of books that we can get, but it's also just finding our own truth and really pampering yourself, taking your own self as a lover, romancing yourself. Like, we may be so focused on romancing other people. What about taking your relationship with yourself really seriously?
Yes. That's something that me and my clients talk about a lot, like this idea of having a solo sexual relationship with yourself.
Yes.
And like treating yourself sexually the way that you would treat your lover sexually. I love that. I love that so much. You're talking about self-care a lot and this idea of using oceanality as a way of self-care. I wonder, what is your self-care practice look like in this realm of oceanality?
A lot of times it's self-romancing, well, treating myself as my own romantic partner and being affirming in my sensuality and what brings me joy. And I love music, and there's sometimes music just gets me going in a way where my waistline starts to move with the rhythms and I'll ride the rhythm. And so I think of twerking for liberation or
yes,
dancing for self-care. And when the music's playing, I love to just freestyle dance.
I love hearing that there is someone else on this planet that uses twerking as a way of practicing self-love and self-care, because I do that all the time. It's so good.
It really can shift my mood. I can just not be in the right zone, and I put on a nice song with a sweet rhythm, and I just, it's my butt just starts going.
Yes. What's your favorite twerking song?
Right now I'm like on this Shining with Beyonce and Jay-Z.
Oh,
I'm like,
yeah.
And it's more so the beats. I try not to get into the lyrics so much because, you know, as a womanist, I just get caught up in how things are problematic.
But totally.
I'm just giving my space to be multifaceted and can just enjoy, you know, not having to have the critical mind on all the time and just turning it off and just listening to some ratchet songs.
Yes.
And being okay with it and not judging myself and kind of just allowing my body to move freely to the rhythms. And yeah, it's just really liberating for me.
I love that.
Because I lose it. I don't know what time it is. You know, when you can lose yourself in the music, it's very interesting what it can happen to the body. And music does have some vibrational things that it carries. So just kind of tuning into my embodied wisdom and taking a break from the pains of being woke.
I love that. I love that. Actually, I would like to ask, like, what are a few books that, you know, if people do want to get more into like the nitty gritty, the heady, the intellectual part of this, like, what are some books that people could start with?
Oh my goodness. So my favorite book is African Sexualities. I mentioned before, I really enjoyed The Invention of a Woman by Orumi. And there's Queering Creole Spiritual Traditions that I found a lot of really fun stories. He does great research that is not heterosexist. I read a little bit about the different interpretation of menstruation, and that was by Teresa Washington. She has some really awesome work that speaks to Yoruba culture.
That's great. That's a perfect place to start. And I'm already going to put these books on my Amazon wish list so that I can like, or maybe I'll check them out at the library. That's actually better for the environment than like buying books all the time.
Yeah. And then there's also Babalaos and like spiritual people out there that can provide guidance, because everyone's on a different path and has different personalities. And talk to elders, talk to people in different spiritual practices that may guide you.
Perfect. Awesome. Thank you so much, Dr. Zuleika, for coming on. I mean, we got into a lot and there's still so much to uncover. I would actually love to have you on again because, like, I really wanted to get on this topic of Beyonce and how, because of her recent work with Lemonade, we're seeing a lot of Oshun references. And, like, mm-hmm. I would just love to geek out with you and talk more about that soon.
Absolutely. Oshun is often depicted wearing a yellow dress. So there's a lot of imagery in lemonade. And then she's pregnant with twins right now, which is like, Oshun was pregnant with twins. So it's just, it's gone to whole new levels.
Where can people find you if they want to hear more about your work? If maybe they would like to read your dissertation, where can they find you?
Anyone interested in receiving my dissertation for free, email me at zelaika@gmail.com. And I'm also at zelaika.com. And then through my website, you can have links to my Facebook and my Instagram and my Twitter account.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Dr. Zelaika. I really appreciate your time. And my gosh, you've given me so much to think about.
Thank you. Yeah. It's all within you.
Thank you for listening to the Sexually Liberated Woman podcast. I really hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, share it with a friend or leave a 5-star review on iTunes. As for me, Evian, you can find me on my blog, sexloveliberation.com, where I write essays about sex, sensuality, and erotic power. I'm also on Instagram at evian.whitney, that's evyan.whitney, where I'm capturing moments of brazen femininity and sexuality throughout the day. And if you want to be a sexually liberated woman, go to sexloveliberation.com/SLW, and maybe I'll be chatting with you about your journey of erotic empowerment someday. See you in the next episode.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.